Today is September 4th, 2023, and I say Boker Tov to everyone on the screen and to the brave people who are in front of me and weathered the traffic to get here on time. I received a negative comment about something I said yesterday, and I was thinking, wow, I haven't gotten negative comments. The last one I got was when I mentioned that the Vishnu Tzareba's brother in Muncie is a Satma in outlook and dedication, and some chassid of his wrote me a nasty letter. Evidently yesterday, and that's a few years ago, evidently yesterday I said something about David Hartman and Yitz Greenberg, and I have a letter from a dear student of mine. Is it really necessary, even appropriate, to so frequently badmouth Rabbi David Hartman Zal or Rabbi Yitzhak Greenberg because they no longer follow or have followed the Derech of the Rav in their later years? So I just want to respond. I didn't want to put it into writing. No need to be negative. But nevertheless, I do want to respond black and white. You have to explain. While this person wrote the letter to me yesterday, I was reading I was reading Yitz Greenberg's article in Jerusalem Post. I will only mention three issues in the article of yesterday. I can give you a long list. I actually debated with him in public in 1980 about the Holocaust abolishing the Naseh v'Nishma of the Jewish people. But in yesterday's article, first of all, he calls for the whole rabbinic court system is no good because we don't have female dayanot. Number one, again, halachically I can discuss the issue for the next hour and a half, but I don't have the time now. Number two, he accuses the rabbis of creating the problem of agunut, of, you know, a man walks out the door, doesn't come back, the wife is an aguna, and we rabbis have created that problem because we don't, I imagine what he means is we don't apply Rabbi Rachman's innovation of Hafkat Kedushin retroactively. If you'll open up Rakafet Aron Chelik Dalid, there's an entire essay on why we can't apply Hafkat Kedushin retroactively in most cases. There are some exceptions, Mekach Ta'ut perhaps, look at the Lamdis, and I think what I wrote is universally accepted. But he accuses the rabbis. Number three, and it takes my health away and my sleep away, he is in favor of the Jewish people having less children. The Haredim, read the article, I can't make it up. Whenever I see that, I shiver, I shake. After the Holocaust, 1.5 million to 2 million Jewish children brutally murdered, what we could have been today, 30 million Jews plus. So I have every right to disagree with him. Rabbi Greenberg, I don't know intimately. I did teach all five of his five children. Unfortunately, the youngest died in an accident here in Israel, a car accident, as I recall. He was on a call his to attention. I taught the two other boys, the two girls, fabulous children, each one. But nevertheless, it doesn't change the fact that I debated with Rabbi Greenberg back in the early 80s when he called Esther Hamalka, I used the word prostitute, maybe he paraphrased it differently, but I'll never forget that article. I was, let me not talk about it, I get upset. Rabbi Hartman, I have to say, I was very close to. He was a role model for me, an inspiration, and as I mentioned after class yesterday to a Lakewood graduate, the reason I went to Lakewood and the reason I wanted to meet Rabbi Aaron Cutler was because of David Hartman. So at times I get upset. Now, and I have to be honest with you, I would have no problem with them if the Jerusalem Post would call them conservative rabbis, Reconstructionist rabbis. My problem begins because the Post refers to them as modern Orthodox rabbis. And that is motzi laz on yours truly, on Gris Kollel, on Yeshiva University, on the OU, on Young Israel. This is not the modern Orthodox way of life. That's why I object. When anyone calls me modern Orthodox, I correct them. Orthodox in Western context. That's what I plead guilty to. But when you use the term modern Orthodox and you can innovate and change halacha, that's motzi laz. We're talmidim of the Rav and talmidim of YU and talmidim of all the Doret that came before us. The basic line is halacha commands obedience and respect. I quote to you, you can look into Dovi's, I think it's the next to last volume that was published from his lectures. And I knew he said this publicly, but when I saw it in print, I was shaking. He was rabbi in Montreal. And Cohen came to him, Rabbi Hartman, I have a problem, I fell in love with this girl. It was either a Giorit or a Grusha. I think it was a Grusha, but it doesn't matter. And I can't marry her. And Rabbi Hartman says, in quote, you can look it up, personal happiness is more important than the halacha. I will be happy, l'sadei kedushin, for you and any other Kohen that has this problem, this difficulty. Quote, end quote. All right, you can be a conservative rabbi, be a Reconstructionist rabbi, be a Reform rabbi, but please, Jerusalem Post, do not call this modern Orthodox. So I hope I've made my case, and I have a right to my opinion, and believe me, I know these two individuals, Dovi Hartman, very well, and Jid Screenberg from the Vikings, Father Kenem Ganskut. I know all his writings, and all I can tell you is it hurts, and that's why I go out of the way. Over the years, I've had endless dialogues with people to the right of me, because I remain an enigma for them, meaning, those of you who know me personally, you'll have to work very hard to find any fault with my spiritual life and my spiritual achievements and my Ibigegebenkeit Zeteide and Yiret Shemayim. Baruch Hashem. On the other hand, I'm a YU product. I'm a product of the Rav and all my Rebbeim. And we can dialogue. And many of them admit, you're right. We have to come out of the ghetto. We have to do this. We have to do that. We have to live in dignity. And then they say to me, but you see, when we come out of the ghetto, look what happens. David Hartman, Jit Screenberg. So I always go out of my way to tell them, don't blame YU. We only get a small part of the blame. David Hartman came to YU a finished product from Lakewood. As I told you, he was on fire with Lakewood, with Rabarin, with Kletz, with all that inspired me when I learned in Lakewood afterwards. And Yitz Greenberg, people make a mistake. He's a BTA graduate, but he didn't go on to Yeshiva College in Reitz. He got smicha from the Vatik Yeshiva in Borough Park in Brooklyn. And all right, with all due respects, Navadic is Navadic, but Rabbi Greenberg is very far from a Navadic stance. So I repeat once again, while I was reading the article, my Talmud was writing the letter, and you can decide who is correct. Okay, Adkan, I just wanted to get it off my chest, and we can go further. I don't mind being criticized, but I will respond if the criticism is not correct to my understanding of Torah Hashem Tamima. Okay, let's go further. And a very fascinating shiur today. We're going to touch upon certain problems that go way beyond the material in front of us. Now, do me a favor. Give me your name now. Moshe David, right, I wrote it down, and you were in the Kollel a number of years ago, but you were not in my class, as I recall.
I was.
You were in my class. What year? Give me the year.
2006 and 2007.
Oh, then you were in my class. Okay.
I have to... You sent me a long time on the Swedish.
Right. Okay, fine. Moshe, so we mentioned last week that, first of all, after the death, and this is a sad part of life, Acharei Mot Kedoshim, and I saw that with Lakewood, as I told you last week, and my heart bleeds, because I knew Reb Aaron Cutler. I would say, even I'm the only person alive that can boast, he argued with the Rosh Yeshiva about Hashkafa. Imagine I had the chutzpah to tell the Rosh Yeshiva that B'nai Akiva is correct. And it's chutzpah. I have to admit that your father's Rebbe was in agreement with me. That was already a different story. Rav Schneer, when he came back from Israel, he said to me, "Mim given papo mizrachi nix," quote, end quote. "Mim given zeyenent sedi hashkafa." And yours truly said in Lakewood when they honored me a few years ago in front of Rav Aaron's grandchildren that if Rav Aaron had come to Israel, he would be a great Mizrahi like his father-in-law, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, the children. And no one could argue with me, because the facts are right in front of them. Yomo.
Can translate?
I don't know English anymore. Leave it stand in Yiddish. And a different time, remind me what I just said, and I'll translate. Let's come back here. But it's very sad. The Maram Shapiro traveled all over the world to raise money. It weakened his body. Kofa Nefesh is an idea that we never... Where do you have it? If your Shur kills a Mu'ed, right? You've learned Baba Kama. I don't have to tell you. Kofa Yishata Love. All right, so he pays Kofa Nefesh. But it became, I would say, a rabbinic aphorism. That if a giant of Torah dies, we're guilty. Why didn't we help him? Why didn't we make his life easier? And we have to give Kofa Nefesh. And that Kofa Nefesh solved the financial problems for the remaining years of Yachal, Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. Now, and we mentioned last week Aaron Levval. And Aaron Levval... Reb Meir Shapira had one brother. He married the brother's daughter. And he was so in love with his Rebbe, he imitated him. He walked like him. He spoke like him. And he became the financial director of the yeshiva. Now, again, this was a doctorate, and it's a very beautiful doctorate. And I have to tell you, we don't have the exact year he officially became. It evidently was a slow process, but he rose above the crowd. And until Hitler later, what can we say? Hitler kills him with many others. The yeshiva was in good hands. Now, we also mentioned last week, and here I got a very fascinating email, Rav Mordechai Yehudel Lubat, the tremendous matmit. Remember that no one knew he's walking in town. What's he doing? Not learning. And he was walking to the dentist. He survived the Holocaust, and you're going to find out why in lectures to come. It's going to be in my article in Chakira. When you find out why, you're going to cry and laugh at the same time. And he went on to Shanghai, and from Shanghai reached America, and he married. I got the email from Israel Shine. Israel Shine is a Talmud that's been my Talmud. He picked me up when he was in Mir, and he's been my Talmud quite a few years. He and his brother, very devoted Talmudim. And he writes that later married Rebbetzin Chana of the famous Fishbein family of Chicago. It's a well-known Torah family. Their cookbooks, a woman married into the family Fishbein, they're very popular cookbooks, but they're Lamdanim and Yureim, Shleimim. His brother-in-laws included Rav Yitzchel Feigelstadt, Rosh Yeshiva of Long Beach. Do you recognize the name? He was one of the, when I learned in Lakewood, Rav Yitzchak Feigelstadt, and he was Yesh Mayayim. This is a kid who did it all on his own. He's not the survivor from Kletsk. He was right up there with the Kletsk survivors when I learned in Lakewood. He died the last few years in Adam Gadol. Rav Shimon Groner, Mashgiach in Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin, was another brother-in-law. And Groner, that's from the Groner family. See, the Groner family, originally this was a Brooklyn family that was in Chaim Berlin, but they were related to the Rebbe. They're Schneersons. In other words, it's in their blood. And when the sixth Rebbe came to America, a good deal of the Groner family went back to their roots. But anyone with the name Groner is part of this family. I've yet to meet a Groner who doesn't tie in with the family. And he, Rav Shimon Groner was Mashgich in Chaim Berlin. Rav Lubat was later a Rav in Borough Park, a distinguished Gerer Chassid, and he published a scintillating volume of Chidushim al HaTorah. So that's what we spoke about last week. Now, the problem is the Rosh Yeshiva. And here, like I said last week, if you come to YU, you come to Teira Vidas, Chaim Berlin today could also be a good example. The Board of Trustees appoints a Rosh Yeshiva. I don't know the inner politics in Chaim Berlin, but right now I mentioned to Yomo, I was responding to someone's email, that the new Rosh Yeshiva is Rabbi Shechter's son-in-law, who is a Moroccan. Chaliva. Moroccan origins, and it speaks well of Chaim Berlin. The Chaim Berlin, imagine 100 years ago, you would have told my in-laws who lived near Chaim Berlin, East New York, it was a whole Jewish world there, Bronzeville. Amol vet kumenat hagas b'rosh yeshiva vet nish fashtein Yiddish. A day will come, Yomo, this is for you, that the Rosh Yeshiva will not understand Yiddish. They would have laughed you out. What, are you crazy? How can you learn Torah if not in Yiddish? And by the way, Aaron Rakefet agrees. There's only one way to learn Torah, and that's in Yiddish. I don't know. My great-grandchildren know Torah, and they don't know Yiddish. I don't know how that's possible, but Moshe will live with the reality. You follow? Coming back here, you got to get a Rosh Yeshiva. And it was very hard to replace Reb Meir Shapiro. A committee was formed, and it's fascinating who they attempted to bring to head the yeshiva. First of all, the Gerer Rebbe supported the greatest Lamdan alive in the world at that time, the Ragatsheva Goyim, Reb Moshe Rosen. Now, Reb Yosef Rosen, I should say, Reb Moshe Rosen, was in America, was also a Gaon HaDir, but the Ragatsheva's knowledge was one of a kind. When Reb Lazer Silva came back during right before World War I broke out, he was a Rav in America. Read the Silva era. He was successful. He had a little money. Decided to visit Europe, his family, his Rebbeim. So he went to Dvinsk, and he went to see Reb Meir Simcha, the Litvish Rav of Dvinsk, and he went in afterwards to the Ragatsheva, and he comes out, and Reb Meir Simcha says to him, "Nu vas van eindruck, what impression did it make on you?" And he says, "The Ragatsheva, Aseltner, Zichkorona, a one-of-a-kind memory." And Reb Meir Simcha says, "You don't know what you're talking about. He has no memory. What does a memory mean? Someone like myself, I learned the Sugya 20 years ago, so I remember something. The Ragatsheva, it's not a memory. Anything you asked him, it's munach lefanav bekufsa. It's in front of him on his desk. It's like he's learning it at that minute. He knows Kol HaTorah Kula right in front of him. No memory. This was the Ragatsheva. Now, the Gerer Rebbe, and it would have been a tremendous achievement. It's like Alon Shvud had a tremendous achievement. They got Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. I can tell you when Rabbi Aaron came, he had a number of offers. And he chose Alon Shvud. And this put Alon Shvud on the map. I don't know how much they, with Rabbi Yehuda Amital, they would have achieved a great deal. But now with Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, they achieved much more. And they're one of the largest, if not, I understand down south, Rabbi Fendel's yeshiva has more students, but certainly Alon Shvud is recognized as an elite Chesda yeshiva. And they had the rocket shove of the name alone. But you see, here's where you come to a different problem altogether. To be a Rosh Yeshiva and also the Gadol Hadar with a fundamental memory, it doesn't always work. And I can come back to the Rav. I'm not revealing any secrets that haven't been published. But look at Rabbi Lamb's Chesped from Moreinu v'Rabbeinu. The Rav, 1941, May, he gives the first shir in the yeshiva, takes over his father's position, the senior Rosh Yeshiva. Otiot niknot b'mesira, the whole sugya in Baba Batra. This was the shir, and that sugya. By the way, part of it later is in a Yotzeit shir, it's written up, Sheirim l'zecha Abba Mori. But the Rav can get hysterical. He's on a level. These are normal Talmidim sitting in front of him. All right, we're bright. I won't say I was stupid when I was a kid. But we're not on the level of the Rav, you see. You can be the Gadol Shebegadolim, but when you give a shir, who are you relating to? And here I come to what the Rav himself said. What is the difference between me and Rabbi Aaron? Rabbi Aaron Cutler died, so people bothered the Rav. The Rav and Rabbi Aaron were very close, very intimate. Doesn't mean they didn't differ. They differed on many basic issues. But on the other hand, the Lundis won out. Each one respected the other. So the Rav said about Rabbi Aaron Cutler, and believe me, he was absolutely, I said, Rabbi Aaron Cutler gave shir for the Mitzuyanim. It wasn't for the average student. I intend to give shir. When I give shir, I want the average student to understand me. And you see, when I learned in Lakewood, an older memoir literature out of Lakewood, I'm not telling you anything that everyone else did not say. They said very simply, Rabbi Aaron gave shir. Maybe people understood the first 10 minutes. Maybe a few more understood. I understood 20 minutes. No one, only Yankel Schiff and maybe a few others from the Kletzka crowd understood the whole shir. And the people would chazer over, you would go to Rabbi Yankel, you would go to Yitzchak Feigelstadt, there were a few giants. They would help you. The Rav had to make his peace with reality. It didn't happen overnight. We lost out at times because Talmidim came in and were frightened by the Rav. Now give me an example. Give me an example of a famous Talmud who was frightened out of his wits by the Rav and ran away and became very famous and a big loss for Torah Hashem Tamima. Vik Chaim Poltak. Read one of his novels where he describes Rabbi Dr. I think he uses the name Shaftman. That's the Rav. And he was frightened out of his wits. He took the train uptown from Washington Heights downtown to 122nd Street, got off and went to the seminary. And he was a loss. He was a loss. I hope something remains of his family. I told you, his brother was my classmate for 16 years, Simon Poltak. Salanta MTA, Yeshiva College, and then he went to the seminary, like many other Yeshiva College graduates. But I got to tell you, Simon's no longer alive, but I've met his children, all Shomer Torah. He was a conservative rabbi, but all his children are Shomer Torah mitzvah, to the best of my knowledge. I met some of them in my travels and my speaking and teaching. And I was very moved to meet his children and see Shomrei Shabbos committed people. But you see, the Rocket Sheva, I don't know how well that would have worked out. You're talking about the Rocket Sheva, if you want to know the truth, the memoir literature and the making of a gadol, and one of the stories of making a gadol of this big Rosh Yeshiva came in to speak and learning, and the Rocket Sheva got so angry he threw a chair at him. And that's Aryeh Bina. Remember, I read to you from Aryeh Bina's memoir that some big Rosh Yeshiva came into the Rocket Sheva, started telling him his chidushim, and the Rocket Sheva had them upgeschluck, negated him, abrogated him. So Aryeh Bina saw that it's going to be a tough call with the Rocket Sheva. He took out one of the, while he was waiting, he took out one of the svarim of the Rocket Sheva, and then he went into the Rocket Sheva and started telling him his own chidushim. And the Rocket Sheva loved him. And he told the Rosh Yeshiva, and then take a look, you're a big Rosh Yeshiva and you don't know what you're talking about. And this kid came in, he's Molei V'Gadush. But leave it at that, I can tell you more stories. But it's interesting who they want. Another name that came up, and this is a very important name. I've mentioned him and re-mentioned him, Reb Menachem Zemba. Reb Menachem Zemba was probably the greatest Lamdan in Poland. He was a Gaon Adir, and he was a businessman. He only later in life, he had a store, hardware, screws, nuts, bolts. Could you picture Menachem Zemba? Later in life, maybe the store didn't do that well, maybe they just pressured him. So then he went into the rabbinate and he plays a big role in the Warsaw Ghetto. And he too was mentioned, but it wasn't for him, just personality-wise. He was accustomed to his independence. And again, you come into the yeshiva, that was one of the problems with the Rav, that the Rav never learned in the yeshiva. And if you grow up in a yeshiva and you see how to teach and you see students, you know, how to deal with students, and you're in the dormitory and you can... It took the Rav a long time to reach the level in the 1970s where the memoir literature tells us that what was it, Thanksgiving Day, the Super Bowl, that's one holiday, and that you're giving class or around that, or a Sunday Super, so I don't know, I only know baseball, and anything outside of baseball, I don't know. Certainly not football, because the Mashkir said, football, Americanad, Mahagachach, Eina Deandera, they kill one another. And today we know from football, anyone involved in football and boxing, later in life, they have tremendous mental problems because they got knocked around so much. So the Mashkiach was right. But the Rav was suffering with a tech. I think it was Baba Batra in First Hall. I mean, I'm living in Israel, but there's memoir literature on this. And finally, the Rav said, and sees the class is restless. They're looking at their watches. Finally said, all right, that'll be enough for today. Go and enjoy the football game. And it took the Rav many years to appreciate, to learn. Believe me, in the 1940s, he would have beat the heck out of them. Why aren't you listening? All right, I can. And again, let me give you a gift. Chaim, you came today in your scooter. I'm going to give you a special gift. True story. When I came to Yeshiva in 51, I was a bright kid. I pushed ahead. I was friendly with the older kids like Aaron Lichtenstein, David Hartman, Gersh Sadowski. I was friendly with the older kids. Oh, I loved them. I loved them. They were inspiration. So people were still whispering about stories about the Rav. Moshe, you're now back in 41, 42, and there's a kid in class, and he says a svara, and the Rav jumps on him, to play this via Turk. How to explain that? How would you say it in English?
To
play this via Ashikara Turk. Ashikara Turk. Nach besser. You're like a drunken Turk. Yeah, and to play this, what is to play this? Like Yomo is going to give you a whole lecture. That's not where he begins and where he ends, and it's confused. And the class starts laughing. And the Rav says, Was Lachman? Was Lachman? He's furious. What are you laughing about? And they say, Rebbe, is a Turk. He is. It was, and I told the story in front of the rabbi that it happened to many years later in Seattle, Rabbi Solomon Maimon, and he was crying. He was already well into his 90s, and he said, How do you know this story? You're so much younger than I am. I said, When I entered the yeshiva, the stories would get legendary. And it was Rabbi Solomon Maimon, and the Rav said, From Avu Kunstel, where do you come from? And he said, Constantinople, whatever it was. He answered, and the class, and the Rav laughed. Finally, the Rav laughed. He Taka is a Turk. Now, there's a different question you have to ask. Chaim, how does Rabbi Maimon know Yiddish? You only ask that question because you're sitting here in the year 2024, and we have two shuls in the building, downstairs Ashkenaz, and on this floor what the Sfadik boys paid for and built themselves years ago. But what you don't know, in my time, any Sfadi who wanted to learn Torah had to learn Yiddish. And in my class, my classmate was Katzin, the chief rabbi's son. At Gizitzinand, he sat right near me. And everything was in Yiddish. And he knew Yiddish like the rest of us. That was then. Today, YU has an entire Sfadi program, Sfadi-based medrash, Sfadi davening, Sfadi Rashi yeshiva. All right, thank God. The Sfadi community has reconstructed itself. But we're talking 80, 90 years ago. Well, the playdest via Turk, a shikar Turk, could be that. That's the expression. All right, the story's even funnier. And here you come to a name that perhaps none of you will recognize, but when I was growing up, we all knew this name. Reb Yosef Sassamanovich. He was an Adam Gadol in learning, born in Yerushalayim, very interesting, and went to Europe. Unfortunately, went to Europe because the yeshiva there were world famous. He came from Lithuanian stock. Went to Telz and was one of the top Talmidim in Telz in Europe. The Rosh Yeshiva of Slabodka, Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein, picked him up as his son-in-law. He was known as the Yerushalmi because his main svarim, everything he wrote, was in on the Yerushalmi. So that was his appellate, the Tanid Yerushalmi. He was a beloved, wonderful Rosh Yeshiva. And he knew how to get along with Talmidim. He already had in him Israeli roots or Palestinian roots, or it's Israel roots. Zionism was very popular at this time. And tells Litvish Slabodka, Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein, the Levush Mordechai, who are we talking about? This is, if you're from Ne Yisrael, you have to stand up when I mention his name, Rav Ruderman, his family, Slabodka. You know who his Talmud was? Maybe we can say his Talmud Mufak. No? Who grew up in Elizabeth, New Jersey? Rav Pinchas Mordechai Teitz. This was his Talmud. Rav Pinchas Mordechai Teitz always spoke of the Yerushalmi, Rav Yosef. Sassmanovich, why did I say it was sad he had to go to Europe? Because he's wiped out by Hitler. And he would have been a very good choice, very unique, because he was broader than mere Lithuania. The very fact that he was a predicate of tells you he was broader than most Lithuanian yeshiva. In addition, he had the Eretz Yisrael background. But there was one problem. No, what was the basic ground rule about being a student in Yachal? Yes, he tried to get in, and they rejected him because he didn't have a bekasha, didn't have chassidus shepeis, didn't have a beard. Follow? And here you have a litvisha. Already had a beard. He was a shtatrav. He was a slabotka rosh yeshiva. But he didn't dress like a chassid. Didn't have payas like a chassid. Do you know that they dressed him up, the board of directors, who were now responsible, they dressed him up. They were so eager for this candidate, they went so far as to dress him in Hasidic clothing. But he came, he gave shurim, they loved him, but he was a fish out of water. When all is said and done, if suddenly I would transfer to a Hasidic yeshiva, even with a beard and payas and a bekesher, and I'd go with a cane, like Vic wants to buy me, with a silver handle, a golden handle, whatever, I'd be a fish out of water. It didn't succeed. But I want to mention, in 1937, he became the Rav of Vilkomir in Lithuania. And he was known as the Gaon Yerushalmi. And Tate Mashmat, it has a double intended. He was born in Yerushalayim, and main knowledge was Yerushalmi. He had a wife named Leah, four children, Moshe, Hildi, Mordechai, and Golda. All of them were killed during the September of 1941 with all the other Jews of that area. Breaks the heart. Now, what they've done in the city, they put up stones on the wall. You know, memory, tourists come to see it. It's a good investment for them. One of the stones is Rav Yosef Zalmanovich. Here it is. And here, when you read about Rav Taitz's biography, his 6 years, first he was in Telz, then he was in Slabodka, and he became a very close student and friend of Rav Yosef Zalmanovich, the Yerushalmi. And he would always quote him. What's interesting about Rabbi Taitz, and this is part of my basic memory of life, and in every biography they speak about it, he was the first one to utilize the radio to teach Torah. Do you remember every Saturday night he gave a shiur on the radio, WEVD, and in Yiddish gave a shiur, and not everyone was happy with him. There was already criticism, a lot of you teaching Torah, everyone can listen, Goyim, Jews, Mechalalei Shabbos. But Rav Taitz did what he had to do, and look what we have today on the internet. You can spend the rest of your life listening to Sheyurim on Sheyurim on Sheyurim. I often say, and the difference between Lubavitch and Breslov is Breslov, all right, the Tater, they were called when I was growing up, Tater Chassidim, dead Chassidim. They believed in a Rebbe who was dead. Lubavitch, if you type in Lubavitch Rebbe to YouTube, you'll get enough material to keep you busy for 77 years, or should I say 770 years. You follow? I was in a restaurant in New York with my Talmud and his family, the Rothenbergs. Danny, Kiki, the children, and on either side of the restaurant, there were different shiurim of the Rebbe. On video, live, you're there. One side, one shiur, the other side, another shiur. The owner, I was told, was a Baal Tshuva, who Lubavitch picked up, and this is the Rebbe, alive and kicking. Now, so these people didn't work out, but nevertheless, the yeshiva has to function. So you have, we spoke last term, there was mashkichim, there were missa talks, and there was one student that already Reb Meir Shapiro appointed him to give Sheorim, Rabbi Moshe Aknovsky, O-K-N-O-V-S-K-I. Now, Reb Moshe Aknovsky, very interesting individual. This was a brilliant kid who was learning in a Litvishi yeshiva in Warsaw. Now, what am I talking about, a Litvishi yeshiva in Warsaw? There was a yeshiva in Brisk, Torah Chaim. It began there, it began with Reb Chaim Brisk's son-in-law. That yeshiva moved on to Warsaw, and even though it was 90% Reb Chaim's derech, it caught on in Warsaw. There were enough Jews in Warsaw, enough young men who wanted to learn. It caught on. And in Warsaw, that's where Reb Meir Shapiro, one of his speaking engagements, fundraising engagements, met this youngster, and he brought him to Yachal. He saw that this kid is something special. And he was Nechba El HaKelem, a little bit overwhelmed, difference in learning. He came from analysis, from Reb Chaim, from Shnei Dinim, and here he is in Warsaw, Chassidish, Bekiyot, Halacha, Chulin. Remember I told you, a Chassidic kid at the age of 12 learned Chulin. In a Litvishi yeshiva, age of 12 to learn Chulin. Chulin, if you go for Smicha when you're 25, learn Chulin. 12 years old, 13 years old, I have to learn Nezikin, Nushim, the Yeshivish Mesechta, sharpened the mind. And this kid sat in the corner, always learning. Quiet, but the Rosh Yeshiva, who is a fabulous Machane, Reb Meir Shapiro, understood that this kid had the goods. And he was the first student appointed to teach in Yachal. Now this leads to a whole discussion, a whole analysis. One day, Abe, if you want to do something, do a doctorate on the changing of the gods in Yeshiva University. And you see, let me just spend a few minutes and open up ideas for you. The greatest mistake, if I say to you today, what are the rabbinical organizations in America? Natan is going to say RCA. All right, correct. Yossi is going to say Rabbinical Alliance. If there's a chassid here who mentioned the Hischachdur, I think it's called Harabonim. Do I have the right name? Hischachdur, Harabonim, Chassidic Rabbinim. Vic, one name is missing. You go up under their thumb. Agudas Harabonim. Rebbeinu Shel Olam, who are we talking about? That place is silver. You know the bus story with the cab driver, I should say, rushing him to the airport, and he's telling the cab driver to speed, and the police stop him for speeding, and the cab driver says, "Officer, I have the chief rabbi of the United States as my passenger." And Reb Lazer from the back pulls down the back window. He says, "United States." And Reb Lazer says, "And Canada." Follow? Agudas Harabonim. But, Moshe, the Agudas Harabonim made one terrible mistake. Your great-grandfather got smicha from Reitz in 1920. He wanted to join the Agudas Rabbanim. The Agudas Rabbanim got hysterical. What? An American kid? What does he know? What's Kenner? Was hat gelernt a 100 daf gemara, das heißt a rav, he learned 100 daf, that's a rabbi. Well, you're nothing compared to us East Europeans. And that was a tragic mistake because it forced the American rabbis to form their own organization. It began with the OU 100 years ago, and by 1935 it moved away from the OU as a separate unit, the Rabbinical Council of America. And the Rabbinical Council of America today is a massive body of rabbis. Not only do you have the RCA, the Rabbinical Alliance, the RA, also began because the Europäische Rabbanim viewed them American outsiders, ignoramuses. These are Rabbanim. And it takes a lot of guts to realize the generation is changing. And if I take you to YU, all the Rabbeim originally were products of East Europe. Outside of Reb Shmuel Gerstenfeld, who was an Ungarische, all the Hungarian from the Chatam Seifus climate, all the rest were Telz, Slabodka, Radin, Brisk, Mir. But the wells dry up. And you have to recognize that little kid is great today. I know a guy named Darren Rakefer, and he also gives a pshat. People kiss him for the pshat. My hands have been kissed. I'm telling you the truth. Pirkei Avos says, Habinoach l'shocheret. Be nice to the black-haired one. Well, what's the pshat? Did you learn that in Pirkei Avos, Jesse? What's the pshat? Because you're a big shot. You're a success. Your hair is white already. Or salty, pepper. And a kid is coming up the ladder, black hair. He's looked down upon him. A yingle. What does he know? That kid one day is going to be great and you're at Shemayim and learning and business, whatever. You be nice to him because one day he's going to be your equal or your boss. And this is hard for old. I went sitting with Rabbanim and they had elected a new slate in RCA and these old time Rabbanim, they're cursing. I couldn't believe it. That's a rabbi, that's a London, that's an idiot, I said, gentlemen, they will grow with the task, the challenge, respect. You were once young. I was once young. Believe me, I went into the rabbin and I told you, 1061, 23 years of age, 1961. If I would know what I know today as a human being, forget about rabbinic knowledge, I would have been the greatest success story. But that's life. You're Yeshira Shirim, you gotta learn, you have to swing and make mistakes. Look at that lady, Pashatati at Kuntati, Eichael Beshena. She didn't have the sense to get dressed and open the door. She was tired. Boy, when you get older, you learn, grab that opportunity. Opportunity knocks once. And you see, there's a time to shift gears. And I want to tell you who shifted the gears and why you. You can quote me. People always drive me crazy with these questions. Who is the Rebbe's greatest Talmidim? All right. I'll give them answers. In the 40s. Who was the greatest Talmid of the Rebbe in the 40s? No? Yomo? Harold Konotopsky. Tzvi Konotopsky. He was the first American-born, educated YU product that became a Rosh Yeshiva. He taught, he was rabbi in Crown Heights, Young Israel. We've spoken about him and he became a Rebbe in BTA. Afterwards, endless American-born kids went on to teach in Reitz. A kid named Donnie Rothkopf. How does he come to be a Rosh Yeshiva? Be appointed by Rav Shmuel Belkin, drink l'chaim with an ich. Ich bin ach mamana Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva Zivitzchokhanan, l'chaim taivim misholam. It's the changing of the gods. And tell me, are you any worse today than it was 40 years ago? The most famous Talmud Chacham in America, I believe his name is Rav Tzvi Shachter, teaches at YU. Rav Mordechai Willig, Michael Rosenzweig, you go right down the list. Wow. We climbed the ladder. And it was a great mistake of the Igoros Rabbanim. And this Oknovsky, he was beloved as a Rebbe, quiet, dignified, never seeking the limelight. And first he was like a lecturer, and then officially appointed a Rosh Yeshiva. And like Rav Avram Palm, I don't know if you're aware, the Rosh Yeshiva of Teira Vidas. His brother was, we lived best like this, Charlie Pam, same building for so many years. All we interacted. I was the Rav, he was the Balabas who wanted to publicize my teachings. Got me into, he wanted to push me into the Knesset. I had a period in life where I had to withstand that temptation. And Rav Avram Palm would never wear rabbinic clothes. He wore a short suit. Was upset to sit up front. Mizrach Mant. It's a certain personality. Rabbi Okhanovsky was exactly the same way. Rosh Yeshiva still remained in a corner of the Beis Medrash. Didn't sit up front. Didn't dress in a more Rosh Yeshiva Hasidic fashion. When he married, all right, he became more of a focal figure. But one of the Talmidim, charismatic, beloved, and a symbol of the changing of the gods. Unfortunately, murdered as early as 1940 at the age of 32. That takes my breath away. We lost so much. And we didn't learn yet. I suffer. Can't understand how Torah Jews can remain in exile. And even if they have to, family reasons, at least the children, the grandchildren. Friday night we had a whole discussion with a family. The grandson is at Mir. He wants to do something big in life. Going back. He's going to be Makar of the world. I just had Talmidim of mine, their daughter and their son-in-law went back, taking little children who were so happy here. And they went back, Kirev Rechokim, and I don't know, I don't understand it. You want to be Makar of Rechokim, we have a world to do here. Move into Tel Aviv and be part of the crowd that's resuscitating a city that was once publicly, totally Shomer Shabbat. And in yesterday's, today's post, there's an article by someone I know, I taught his daughter, and I respect this person, but he doesn't understand that we're not Christians. Christians, their religion is personal. It's not a people, an amyus. We are Jews on two levels. I have so much Torah. Let me just say, we are Jews on two levels. Individually and part of Am Yisrael. And having the subway run on Shabbos, he came up with ideas they won't charge for people to use at Shabbos. You'll enter like in Russia, you can't go through the lights, So people who used the subway to go to shul on Shabbos, they had a way of entering where they didn't turn lights on or off the metro. And you'll have non-Jewish drivers on Shabbos. Let me tell you, that whole proposal is non-Jewish, non-Torah. On a public level, Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, that gives us the right to Eretz Yisrael. Without that, we have no right. Eretz Yisrael belongs to Am Yisrael. The whole concept of Arevat, you all know the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Tosfos, it only begins after we cross the Jordan River and come into the heart of Eretz Yisrael. And this is what people don't understand. And here, all right, another Jew, another great Jew, killed children. What the Holocaust did to us, and we have to install. Anyone teaching, the first thing you have to tell your students the minute you walk into the classroom, I am so proud to be here. I had a Rebbe who was teaching well into his 80s, I hope into his 90s, and he still remembers where we were at after the Holocaust. Please take off that New York Yankee hat. We don't tolerate that today. It's a Sandlot team, not the Yankees from the Bronx. Back here. And you have to tell them how proud we are. After World War II, everyone was saying Kaddish. There will never be a Jewish Torah again, a Jewish people, a Jewish Sabbath. Ben-Gurion was positive here in Eretz Yisrael that within 20, 25 years, there won't be a Torah Jew left. And look where we're at 80 years later. Am Yisrael, Chai V'Kai. Pride in who we are, what we achieved. Yesh Me'ayin. Seventh grade, our teachers, eighth grade, that didn't speak a word of English. And I didn't speak a word of Yiddish. And out of that meeting, look what came. Look how many lives have been influenced. How many B'nai Torah. Wow. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. My children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, and my students, and their students. Okay. So, this is an interesting point, and the truth is, Natan, do a doctorate on Harold Kanatovsky's life. He was so good, so learned. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I heard this from people who were there. At his Chag HaSmicha, we're talking in the 40s, he was selected to give the drasha. When he finished, his classmates getting smicha all stood up for him as he walked back to his seat. And it's worth looking into it. His final years were here in Israel. He died young, unfortunately. It's worth looking into it. But he paved the way. Now, they still went on looking. And in 1935, it took two good years, they found someone who fit the bill, became Rosh Yeshiva, and you know what's, I would say, odd when you think about it, he was actually Rosh Yeshiva a year longer than Rav Meir Lublin, Rav Meir Shapiro. Rav Meir Shapiro died in 33, was Rosh Yeshiva 3 years. He became Rosh Yeshiva in 35, and he was to remain Rosh Yeshiva till the Nazis came and ended it all, basically 1939. So he was Rosh Yeshiva for more than 3 years, almost 4 years. His name, Rabbi Tzvi Aryeh Fromer, F-R-O-M-E-R. We'll talk about his life in detail. He was known as the Kaz Higlava, K Kozhigloviar. Why was he known as the Kozligova? That was his rabbinate before they brought him from the rabbinate to become Rosh Yeshiva. His published work was Shelot Tshuvot Eretz Tzvi. And Reb Heschel Schechter, who's safer on Lumdus, responsum, is a very similar title, Tshuvot Eretz Tzvi, and I think Reb Heschel Schechter is Tshuvot Eretz Hatzvi. I think there's a hey there to differentiate. Reb Heschel quotes him extensively. They call him the Kozhigloviar, but his name was Reb Ayulev from now. I just want to tell one story about him. We'll talk about him in more detail later on, but I just want to bring you to a certain point today. I want to tell one story about him to see why the story is very precious to me. A Rebbe is a Rebbe. Your greatest asset are your students. The Gemara in Tainit, Dapsayin, Mitalmidai Yotem Mikulam. Now, what does that mean? And I can tell you again, I'll tell this off the cuff. Don't record it. The world doesn't have to hear it. But one time we were sitting with the Rav, and again, conversation outside of class. And we quoted something from the Chazon Ish, and the Rav didn't like it. What it was, I don't recall. Achumra, you know, I used to say Achumra from the Chazon Ish. And I remember the Rav said, and he knew the Chazon Ish from Vilna, and he had tremendous derech eretz for the Chazon Ish. And the Rav said, his problem is a hot nishkan talmidim. He doesn't have students. He said, Eved gehot talmidim in gezakt hashir, they would have corrected him. They would have argued with him. They would have helped him reach a different conclusion. And you see, there's a lot of truth to this. The Rav, if you are familiar with Volume 2 of the Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, I shall not tell you who authored it. And in Volume 2, I quote a talk the Rav gave when the RCA honored him at the Yachei Kala. There was a dinner in Boston. The Rav already was on in years, and Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld spoke about the debt we owe the Rav. And the Rav got up and said, I don't know if you owe me a debt. All right, maybe I taught you something. But I certainly owe you a debt. Because of my students, you fine-tuned me. Go and look in Volume 2. You'll see that beautiful talk that the Rav gave. And you'll see in a minute why I'm tying this together with the Kozhigloviar. And when he became Rosh Yeshiva, he no longer was a Rav. He had Talmidim. There was interaction. And one time in Shir, he said something, and a Talmid, Reb Tzvi Hirsch Tevel, argued with him. And he stood his ground, pushed the Talmud away. Later, he was thinking it over, and you know something? The Talmud is right. I was wrong. Where's the... Who is he yet? The restaurant. Well, he's eating in the dining room. He went into the dining room, took a plate of fish, carried it over in public to the table where the young Tzvi Hirsch Tevel was sitting, and gave him the plate of fish. Du bist gerecht, ich bin nicht. You are right, I am not. Wow. How do we know the story? Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Tevel, Rav in Brooklyn, interview. He survived November 27th, 2003. Rabbi Tevel was very proud of this story. No? How does this come into the Rav? What am I I talking about? No Yomo, anyone who saw the documentary I brought into the world, The Lonely Man of Faith. The Rav in class, I told you, he called me Reform Rabbi. I'm not the first one he put down. That was years later. A Talmud says something, and the Rav, no, you're not right, and he puts him down and everything. An hour after the Shia, the Rav is thinking it over, and boy, that Talmud was right. Goes into the Beis Medrash, he sees some of his Talmidim, and he says, who is the young man? Where's the young man? Where is he now? They said, Rebbe, he's eating in the greasy spoon. Yossi, you've heard of the greasy spoon? What was it? Across the street from Yeshiva was the a little luncheonette, whatever you call it. Anyone here remember the greasy spoon, or am I the only one? It was called the greasy spoon. Believe me, when you get older, don't eat grease. It's not healthy. There's a whole shiva today I saw already. I think Rav Melamed dealt with it. If you're allowed to serve kugel at a kiddush, because it has the grease in it, the oil, and it's not good for the heart. And evidently canola oil or olive oil is not good. Well, what about your kugel? Didn't have Baruch Hashem. A little touch. Okay. Baruch Hashem. I ate Morty makes potato kugel Shabbos. I had Morty's potato kugel this past Shabbat. Okay. Baruch Hashem, we both survived in dignity. So the Rav, Bechvodo V'Atzmo, crosses the street to the Amsterdam Avenue. I see it before my eyes, the greasy spoon. Yaakov, du bist gerecht. Ich bin nicht. You were correct. I was not, in front of everyone in the greasy spoon. Moshe, did you hear this story in your time? Wow, boy, I must be so old at the... But it's in The Lonely Man of Faith, in the video. The story is there, black and white. Yomo, you heard the story? Baruch Hashem. That's a good sign. Now, all right, this is life, this is interaction, this is a Rebbe, this is a Talmud. And take care, and lehitrot, and I thank you very much for joining the ranks of Natan Bauer. Got it? And my regards to Stuart, you'll take care of it, and his wife. And you brought back so many memories, you have no idea. His parents, his sisters, wow. Okay, wow. So you see, this he fit in, Rabbi Oleg Frommer, he was a London muvhak. All right, he was a rav until now, he was a posek, but he made the adjustment, and you learn to appreciate students. Me talmidai yotem mikulam. And this is Torah. This is Torah Shebal Peh. These are the generations. The continuity. Okay, I have wonderful shirim prepared. I should reach them this year, next year. But you'll see from Rabbi Menashe Klein, the Kshayas underlined the word continuity. All right. No, you have a young student, Askenovsky, giving shirim. You have the Rosh Yeshiva. But he was never Rosh Yeshiva like the Maram Shapiro. They're ready, the money and the technical matters were in other hands. But he could liegen lernen, just remain in learning, give sheyurim chidushim. Need it more? And here you come to another very interesting individual that I'll just touch upon slightly, but there's a lot more to say about him, which we'll do down the line. Rabbi Leib Landau of Kolbiel. All right, now, first of all, the name Landau tells you right away, an anacle of Rabbi Cheskel Landau, the Noda B'Yehuda. somehow the Noda B'Yehuda and the Chatam Sofer, and a lot has been written. There was a very brilliant doctor had done in Israel a few years ago on the interrelationship between them. Very fascinating. They were zoicha to something that very few gedolim were zoicha to. Endless, endless descendants who remained shomrei Torah and mitzvot, and among them lamdanim mufakim. Whenever you hear the name Landau, you immediately check if they're Levium, then you can be sure they're descendants of Rav Chatzkel. I actually know a Landau, Jeff Landau, who I told you about, and he is not a Levi, but his grandparents told him that they do descend from Rabbi Yechezkel Landau, but there was intermarriage with non-Levium, and it comes back to the name Landau. So he's one of the rare exceptions. Now, this Rabbi Leib Landau was a rather tremendous Lamdan, but he had never studied in a yeshiva. He was very different from the average Rav of the time. Independent, and many of the Landaus were independent in thought, in their lifestyle, and he fit into the Maram Lublin's yeshiva. Why did he fit in? Because he was different, he was unique. And this whole pan-Hasidic yeshiva was built upon, David, the concept of we're unique, we're different. You follow? And he fit in. And let me just mention where he was different. You know anything about him, Yomo, that you look so excited?
No, I just realized that he's a descendant of Noda B'Yehuda, who was a big opponent of Baal Shem Tov, and now he ends up in Hasidic yeshiva.
Well, the Baal Shem Tov, you're right, was a big opponent. You heard my Sheyurim and the Tshuva and the Hinani Mukhan and Muzuman, Lashem Yichud Kutsha, and Hasidim and Poshim. Yeah, I gave many Shurim on it. And you're right. But you see, Maram Shapiro already didn't attract the fire of the Litvakin for one simple reason. The heart of Yachal was Shas and Paiskim. There were no Sheurim in Hasidus. I mentioned this. And it was like a turnaround that, all right, you want to be a Hasid? Fine. It's nice. It's good. We encourage it. But the touchstone of being a Jew, the lodestar, is Shas and Paiskim. And Litvakin, you could consider bringing Rav Yosef Zussmanovich to this yeshiva. You follow? And this could be Landau, but there's more to Landau. He was very unique in this sense, and this is true, they say, about Rabbi Yechezkel Landau. And by the way, in some of the biographies that come out of Bnei Brak, they try to hide this fact. It's very simple. Rabbi Yechezkel Landau knew all secular knowledge. He knew mathematics. He knew science, he knew language, he was unique. This grandson, Rabbi Leib Landau, was totally conversant with the Western world, scientific knowledge, secular studies, mathematics, and his knowledge combined with his familiarity with geography, mathematics, and science gave his Sheurim much wider breadth. And this is what you can understand. He was welcomed with open arms in Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. I don't think he would be welcomed in open arms in some of the Litvishi yeshiva at the time, too broad, too much knowledge. On the other hand, no different than his great-great-grandfather, the Noda B'Yehuda. And the Noda B'Yehuda was highly respected. You read the biographies, the royalty, the monarchs, the kings, the the non-Jews, his knowledge was widely respected. It went way beyond only Talmud and Poskim. And to a certain degree, that's the Rav widely respected, cardinals came to him for advice, professors, Lubavitcher Rebbe, you have the same story, Lubavitcher Rebbe, people of all ilks came to him for guidance, for advice, people walked into the Rebbe who were professors and spoke with them in their field of specialty, and they would walk out and say, the Rebbe knows more than me. I remember at YU it happened, there was a speech professor who was very big in literature, and he spoke with the Rav and he walked away. Wow, what the Rav, you know, I don't know American literature, but I know the Rav is Bucky in Russian literature, War and Peace, Tolstoy, Pushkin, etc. All right. These people had broad, broad knowledge. But there was something else about Rav Landau that made him very unique for his times. Rabbi Yaleb Landau had only one child, a daughter. This daughter, it's flesh and blood. She became his chavruta, his study partner. Whenever he was home learning, speaking and learning, who did he talk to? His daughter. When he went for walks for South and all Gedolei Yisrael, it's interesting, nothing has changed. They talk about Rabbi Levine would be walking, the Gerer Rebbe, Rebbe Yisrael, they tell stories he'd be walking. On Malchei Yisrael, 50s, early 50s, mid-50s, and he'd see Jewish children without kippot, children of survivors, and he'd give them brachat. Walking. My doctor, how much walking do you do? It's evidently the healthiest exercise. So I tell him where I daven shachris, where I daven mincha marav, and where I park to go to gris. Oh, does his face light up in a big smile. No problem. Enough walking every day. And whenever he would walk with his daughter. And that daughter was a lamdanit muvheket. And this is very uncommon in Poland. He spent a lot of time with her on her walks. And he explained that he needed a knowledgeable companion so as not to be mevatel Torah when he was walking. Yet in other ways he was a strict traditionalist, accepting an all-encompassing Torah outlook. So you see, Yaakov was unique. The people that attracted it, there was a certain uniqueness, Hakhanovsky, Torah Chaim, Bris, and Hasidus, Shas, Paiskin, Cholin, Halacha Lemaisa. Rabbi Yaleb Landau, Rabbi Yaleb Frimer, Rabbi Yaleb Landau, his daughter. And here I want to share with you a little story I just picked up that warmed my heart. You're sitting in a building that is owned by a Bronx mafia. We're lucky we let you in. There's no one here from the Bronx. Who got this campus for Torah? A kid named Donnie Rothkopf from the Bronx. Who was appointed head of the Kollel? His father fought for this branch. A kid from the Bronx. Rabbi David Miller. You have a tremendous institution here. Torah Tshraga. Who heads up Torah Tshraga? No? What do you say, Moshe? Rabbi Avishai David from the Bronx. Natan can't believe he grew up in Whitmer, Muncie. He can't believe that there any Torah in the Bronx. Who heard of Torah in the Bronx? And we're the mafia. We own this building. So a guy named Rakefet wrote a lot of memoir in a 7th volume, From Washington to Washington. Rabbi Avishai David, during Corona, wrote a memoir. It was just published, and he gave me a copy last week. To be honest with you, I couldn't put it down. Wow. And there's one story there. When I read the story, I said, wow, this fits in with Rabbi Landau. And the story is very simple. He tells a story that he was a Talmud of Rav Noach Bornstein. You've heard about him in my shiur time and again. And he told Rav Noach heard him speak and give a hold of a Torah. And he spoke with him on the Pasha. And Rav Noach loved what he was saying. And Rav Noach asked him, what's your source? Where did you get it? And he says, my source, Nechama Leibovich, the Gilyonot. I don't know if you remember that. I still remember she's the sheets that were sent all over Israel. You sent back answers, and that tzaddeket who had the privilege of knowing that tzaddeket, every last sheet she would look over, correct, make comments. This was how Nechama began. So Rav Noach Bornstein looks at him. Afroy, you know, he said he was a cynic, a bit of a cynic in America. And, what? You're so a chidush from Afroy? How can it be? We can sign. The next day, Avishai is in the Gottesman Library. The library was split then. It was two libraries. Pollock Library, secular books, Gottesman Torah books, Hebraic books, Yiddish books. Gottesman was on the second floor of the main academic center. I think it's the high school library today, if I'm not mistaken. And all our shiurim were right there in the classrooms. That's why I started teaching in 62, right opposite the library. Started teaching in yeshiva. I started teaching in 59 in Englewood, New Jersey. And he sees Reb Noach took out the Gilyonot of Nechama Leibovich, and he's looking, and Rav Noach sees him, and Rav Noach apologizes for his negativism of yesterday and says, you should understand, but we never saw in Mir and Bris women should write Chidushei Torah. But he says, this woman is unique. She is on a level. It warms my heart. I knew Nechama so well. I taught with her, back to back, side to side, in three different schools. Gold, BMT. I brought her into the Kollel. Rav Noach Bornstein, my Rebbe. Women. And this is our biggest problem. When I started this year an hour and a half ago and I answered that letter, how do we balance out taking women out of the kitchen? They're not needed in the kitchen today. First of all, men make food. Morty's not the only one. All my grandsons know how to cook. My wife is mad at me, upset with me. I'm a great cook from the freezer to the microwave. My grandsons know it's a different world. Is it good or bad? I don't know. That will be for another time. You heard what I said Friday night, what Malka would have answered the queen. You're a working mother. Maybe bad, but that's the reality today. How do we balance it out that women can do everything and remain women and remain loyal to Torah? Torah has a separation. We're equal, but we're separate. Torah's genius. A man has to remain a man and a woman a woman. Woman dayanat. We create agunat. I'm sorry. I'm hurt to my inner core. Not modern orthodox. Conservative, reconstructionist, fine. No one, I'm not going to force my opinion upon anyone. You want to study with me? Baruch haba b'shem Hashem. I want to talk about Israel. Give me a chance. Let me review. What have we done today? All right, we've gone a lot further. We're coming near the tail end of Yachav. Next week, yeah, we have to talk about what happened at the very end and what I introduced you to last week, no one could realize that this was the end, that would be so terrible, horrible. But we finally found the youth can take over. Rabbi Okhanovsky, Rabbi Konotopsky. We finally found Rabbi Yoleb Shrimmer, Rabbi Yoleb Landau. But we have a lot more to do. The Holocaust, the biographies of these people, brief biographies, the survivors, what went on, how some survived. Vic, you won't believe what I have uncovered. You don't have to say, I heard, I thought, it's rumored. I have it black and white. Wait till, I hope next week, if not the week afterwards, Be'ezrat Hashem. In the Sunday class, thank God we finished drinking the milk, and we come into another problem, my union and envy are towing yan. All my children, many of my grandchildren have intermarried ethnically. I go to an engagement party, I can't eat legumes. Imagine if a great-grandchild, and I hope this happens, brings home a teimaniyah, and she wants to honor the great-grandfather, and she brings me chocolate-covered locusts. No? Moshe, can I eat them? What?
The video over Shefferi.
Chocolate-covered locusts?
Not chocolate.
So that's my student. I got a Shiler on Thursday, a Talmud, or Friday, a Talmud called me, Talmud from 50 plus years ago. Terrific Talmud. And he had to give a talk on Shabbos, and he remembered a class I gave 50 plus years ago, and he wanted to know more details. And I happened to mention to him what I'm doing, and he asked me, what are you teaching Sunday, Monday? And I mentioned, I said, chocolate-covered locust. He said, Rebbe, you don't have to chocolate-cover them. Just let them be locusts to be sufficient. Also, I want to show you my dear Talmud. Ah, he doesn't give up. I got to give him credit. Moshe Weider, let me just give you all his titles. Harav Moshe Weiner, he's Rav in Coney Island, he's a Chabadnik, Rav Moshe Nisim Vina, and he's the one who has put out endless articles, Svarim, on you must have a beard. Here is the latest edition, Hadrat Panim Zakan, that you must have a beard, and he honored me with a copy. And I want to tell Moshe, we've argued in class, you all heard Shurim over the years. I want to tell Rav Moshe, and he's a wonderful Talmud, don't misunderstand me. He credits me with being a very important influence at a certain point of his life, which is true in the long before many of you were born in the mid-60s. And I just want to tell him, I made a survey of my grandsons. About two-thirds have beards. So even though the Rebbe is a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, hanged, toothless, depraved, degenerate, surreptitious example of a beardless Jew, he must be doing something right. Two out of three sons-in-law, and two-thirds to three-quarters of my grandsons have beards. Okay. Are there any questions from those in front of me? Okay. I'll sign off at the end. Remain with me another few minutes. I have a lot to give away. Okay. I spoke last week about the current crisis on the yeshiva world and core curriculum. If you're following the Israeli news, you'll see that every word I said is correct. And we're caught up in a very deep crisis. It's, as people have said, we want to determine what the future of the state of Israel is. And here we're at the cross point. Will it be a Jewish state, or will it be a state of Jews, of Jewish origins, but the state will be for all its citizens? And I've seen this now time and time again. And the reason we're caught up with the machloket now is because the so-called left, or the Haaretz crowd, the Shoken crowd, sees with their own eyes that the religious Jews are having children. They've had article after article against having so many Jewish children. You have to rip Kriya when you read an article like that. Shem Yirachem. And they see what's happening here. Worse than that, our educational systems are more successful. It's not like 1948, 49, 1950, where Eitz Chaim graduating classes, 80% of the kids were no longer religious. Today, we're running a good, strong 80%. And the Haredi world, the Chadali world, the Tzioni Dati world, we have our problems, but we have tremendous success. So this issue hangs fire. I hope we'll find, as you know what happened in Tel Aviv and the Herzliya High School, I don't have to elaborate, it's today's news. And it's very shocking. Herzliya High School was the first educational arm of the Zionist movement, because it was not committed to Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha. Rav Kook organized Tachkamoni a few blocks away from Tel Aviv and Yafo. At that time they were right next to each other, as they are today with southern Tel Aviv. And he opened Tachkamoni, the first modern religious Zionist high school. And look what's happened. And it's exactly what Rav Kook wrote in a letter. The man was a prophet. That famous letter to the, I trust you're familiar with it, the famous letter to the Rashi Yeshiva, whose children left the path and became Zionists without religion, and he told them, keep the level and channel of communication open, support them, but you should know that if they remain secular, it can only succeed for one generation, two generations. Beyond that, Zionism without Torah cannot continue. And that's exactly what we see today. Zionism after three, four, five generations in Israel without any trace of Torah, Yirat Shemayim. You remember your grandfather, he was just like you. Not like 50 years ago when he had a beard and payas and there was something to remind you where you came from. And we see exactly what Rav Kook said happening before our eyes. But I want to touch one other point. 2 weeks ago or so, the 4th of August, it's a month ago, there was a beautiful article in Makor Rishon interviewing one of the top people in the technical world. His name, Alan Feld, and interviewing him on this issue. The minute I saw the article, I was very attracted. He's 61 years old, married to Dr. Leona Fisher Feld, plus five. Ask Dr. Leona who her Rebbe is, and you won't be surprised to hear it's someone named Aaron Rakefet. She is my dermatologist today. You've heard the name, considered one of the top, if not the top dermatologist in Jerusalem, like her father was the top dermatologist, I believe it was in Montreal. And I read that interview and almost every word I agree with. I just want to zero in on what I don't agree with, and I hope I can be of help here. You see, when we deal with the secular, we dialogue with them. So we have to be respectful. I quote the Rav in volume 2 of my work on the Rav, where he talks about his relationship with Reform and Conservative, and he says, I've never been disrespectful, I don't put them down, etc., etc. But there's one point I want to make. The Chazon Ish agreed to meet Ben-Gurion. This is a big chapter in the Chazon Ish's life. It's also a big chapter in the Rav's life, if you know what I'm talking about. Of course, the Rav quoted this many years later in a hesped for his uncle, the Briska Rav, and the Rav was attacked in public at the time, quoting the Chazon Ish. It was a terrible experience. If you don't know about it, ask me some other time, I'll tell it to you in detail. And the Chazon Ish said to Ben-Gurion, quoting the Gemara, if two donkeys meet and there's not enough room for them to pass, the one that has the bigger load has to go first. And the Chazon Ish made the analogy, we who are religious, we carry the wagon filled with tradition. We have to go ahead of the secular who have a wagon that is empty. So time and again I see people, and it's the point is made in this article, that we have to tell the Chiloniim, you have a wagon and you have filled it too, we have to give them respect. No! What we're talking about is a Jewish wagon, that the Chiloniim are wonderful and you can conquer the world and you can be an atomic scientist and you can go to the moon and you can know all of Shakespeare by heart. That's absolutely beautiful and wonderful, but that's not Jewish. That's not, it can be part of Judaism. It's not the heart of Judaism. You can do endless tikkun olam, but before you metaken olam, we have to be metaken olam, the malchut kadai, with God, with Torah, the Jewish people. And this is where I always feel we have to say to them, we respect you, we understand you. You have knowledge, you do wonderful things, you do gemilat chesed. But there are 10 commandments. 5 are between man to man, 5 are between man to God. Without the 5 between man to God, all 10 will not survive ultimately. And the 5 between man to man do not necessarily enable the Jewish people to have continuity. Tikkun Olam is beautiful, but to create Jews who will carry the torch 100 years from now, you need Shabbat, you need Kashrut, you need Tarat Mishpacha. Our wagon is filled with Jewish values. Appreciate it. Understand it and give us right of way. And that's the one point I want to make. And I want to add to this, you all know that I came out against a certain ruling of Tzohar. And again, I want to explain to you why. I always loved the fact that in the wine industry, Jews who desecrated the Shabbat were not allowed to work. And that was making a statement that if you're not a Shoyim Shabbos, you're not a total, you're not a proper, you're not an authentic Jew. This is not continuity of the Torah people. I love that. Well, Tzohar came along. I hope someone's listening and they'll revise the Psak. I'm not an Amoritz. I know very well Reb Kivega, the Binyan Sion, the Aruch Lanea. I know what I'm talking about. Reb Yaakov Ettlinger. I know very well. There's a bit of a heter if Friday night in your house a non-Jew touches the wine, a Mechalel Shabbos touches the wine. All right, they gave the heter of a Chilul Shabbos. I wouldn't give it with a non-Jew. Chilul Shabbos. All right, Tinok Shenishpa, they're not Mechalel Shabbos, b'mezit, they don't know any better. They don't have a din of non-Jews. So b'dieved, your cousin came from America, you had her over Friday night, she touches wine that's not mevushal. Don't have to throw the bottle of wine away afterwards. To take that heter and apply it to Mechalalei Shabbos working in a vineyard in Kramim, I can't accept it. Let the statement remain, our wagon is filled with Jewish values, continuity, Torah, commitment. Look at the Aliyah. You get only 2 types of Aliyah today. people running away from war zones, Ukraine, Russia, or Jewish people seeking Lo Rak Am Yisrael, the Torah Yisrael, but the basis of it all, Eretz Yisrael. Yisrael V'Oraita V'Kudshu Berichu Chadhu, and the basis is Eretz Yisrael. A lot to say. Have you forgotten Rashi, the Ramban, the Sifri, Mitzvot and Chutz Laretz are not real mitzvot. We're only practicing to remember when we come home. And I say pshat in that medrash, cited by Rashi, cited by Ramban, a lot of people have a problem with that medrash. I say, yes, the mitzvot and chutz laretz are to keep us Jewish. Without them, we totally assimilate lo aleinu. Intermarry, we're gone. Only in Eretz Yisrael, where you won't assimilate, you'll remain an Israeli, where you won't intermarry. That's where we really do the mitzvah for the sake of the mitzvah. That's the real key of the mitzvah, not just to keep us Jewish. Think about it. Okay, I want to mention a lot is being done. I have in front of me anyone who reads modern Hebrew, it's kedai to take this. It's a publication coming out from Haredim who want to warm up the Haredi world to Israel, its problems. Rename Haredim, but become part of it. And there's a beautiful article here, the Heshev Lev Avot Avonim and the Kamenetsky family, on Reb Yaakov, Reb Nesson, and the grandson, I believe his name is Reb Yosef, and very fascinating article. So let me open it to the world now. Yomo, open it to the world.
Recording stopped.
Okay. Are there any questions from around the world? Jack, I gave the date, right? And you, what you wrote up, you wrote, it's much better what you're writing up. I just want to make one correction, not that it's important, but a few weeks ago, I mentioned my Rebbeim in 7th and 8th grade, not 9th grade. 9th grade already, I was in high school, MTA, so it was a different shlav already, 9th grade. Okay. And Rabbi Rubin, did you hear my comments yesterday? The Shaila you spoke about with me on, was it Friday or Thursday? I tell you, it so troubles me that a Rav cannot understand the human being, Hakarat HaTov, Chilul Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam. And we got involved yesterday on the discussion on an adopted son, someone you raise, I know a case where he was told not to sit shiva, and I was so angry. It was a chilul Hashem. It caused so much gossip. No one even knew he was adopted. And this is a parent who raised you, sent you to college, paid for your education. Ribbono Shel Olam, Rabbanim have to know the fifth Shulchan Aruch. Without the fifth Shulchan Aruch, we have a real problem. Okay, are there any questions? All right, until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya. Thank you so much.